Welcome to Water of the Word, the radio ministry of Pastor Steve Hadley of Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. Join us today as Pastor Steve continues through a verse-by-verse study of the powerfully prophetic book of Daniel. Follow along as Pastor Steve shows us the stunning precision of God's prophecies. At the same time, we'll see how God equipped and protected Daniel to walk in integrity and power while living in the midst of the most powerful and enticing culture the world had ever seen. So come on along. May we all be refreshed and inspired as we are washed by the water of the Word.
Verse 6, "And after this I looked up, and there was one like a leopard. The bear is powerful, but lumbering. A leopard, very, very fast and fleet of foot." He's very, very different, this leopard, "which had on its back four wings of a bird. The breast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it." Now, what is this about? Well, Alexander the Great conquers the known world by the time he's about 33 years of age, and his battle tactics were spectacular. He moved so quickly. It's an indicator of the speed of Alexander the Great, how fast and quickly he moved. In the decisive battle of Issus, that's in southern Turkey up there, Alexander defeats the Medo-Persian army of 1 million soldiers, and he did it with his own army of 35,000 men. How did he do that? Alexander the Great's battle tactics are studied even today in military academies all over the world. And in fact, one despot of the previous century, Adolf Hitler, he borrowed heavily from Alexander's highly mobile tactics. And he used mechanized infantry and airplanes. And he moved so quickly that the Germans referred to this lightning-fast attack as Blitzkrieg. Now, what about the four heads? Well, Alexander ends up in Babylon. He loved the city of Babylon. He was taken not only by the culture and advanced society, but don't forget, you had that sort of occultic college that has been there since the plains of Shinar and Nimrod. And he was taken by these magical arts. And believe you me, it's not like pick a card. Things like astral projection, where the human body would stay behind, and the spirit would leave the body, move into another room, and identify people and artifacts that there's no way the guy could have seen because he was in this room. And then, of course, you had various incarnations of witchcraft and spell binding and supernatural things of moving around, telekinesis. It's pretty powerful stuff. And to a culture who didn't have the benefit of the scientific revolution, to them that was quite amazing stuff. And why was it so powerful? Because it was real. It was supernatural. It was cultic. Well, Alexander the Great was smitten by that advanced society, and he was about to move his kingdom, the capital of his kingdom, from Greece to Babylon. But as you know, he got very, very drunk one night, and some have speculated that he was poisoned. We don't know. But he suddenly took seriously ill, and he died. And while he was laboring and holding on to his life precariously, "What shall become of your great empire, O Alexander the Great?" And he didn't give him a whole lot of detail. He said, "Give it to the strong." And four generals, Cassander takes Greece and Macedonia. Lysimachus takes Thrace, Bithynia, and most of the eastern Asia Minor. Seleucus, he was a big one. He takes Syria to the north, Babylonia, and East India. And within a very short time, he assimilates the area of Lysimachus. And then Ptolemais, one of the big generals, he moves south into Egypt. And he also expands there. You remember when Cleopatra and Mark Antony, also known as Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, she was not Egyptian. She was a Ptolemy. She was a Greek. Ptolemies to the south and Seleucids to the north will set up Daniel chapter 11. Wait till we get there. It's really going to be something. The Bible prophesies that not only is Alexander the Great going to show up, and in future chapters we're going to see some more specific details about him, but not only is he going to show up, but he's going to die, it would seem, prematurely, and that great world empire is going to be dissected into four regions. Hey, Harvest, did that happen? Of course it did. Now verse 7. Behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth, and it was devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling the residual or the residue with its feet. Why isn't there a more typical description? Lion, bear? Nope. Because this beast is so ferocious and so terrible, the earth will have seen nothing like it before. This indescribable beast is what we're going to refer to tonight as Rome, but Rome A. Go ahead. Look at what Rome accomplished. By about 114 AD, there is Rome at its greatest. And they call the Mediterranean its pond. Look at that. There's only one empire that I'm aware of that occupied more square miles than the Roman Empire. Some would argue that the Genghis Khan and the Mongols might have had more real estate. But the English, at the last of the 1800s and into the early 1900s, the imperial portion, it wasn't all contiguous, it all wasn't together, but real estate all over the world. Some have argued that the British Empire might have occupied more land, it certainly occupied more people, but you had more people in the 1800s, 1900s than you did here. What a feat of administration. You guys, that's before the internet. That's before telephone. That's before telegraph. How in the world did they keep that rolling? By about 114 AD, Rome controlled southern Britain, much of Europe, including France, Belgium, Switzerland, Germany, west of the Rhine River, most of North Africa, all of Asia Minor, east to the Fertile Crescent, the Caspian Sea, and the Persian Gulf. And though it declined in the second portion, or the second century AD, it was sacked by the Goths in 410 AD, I want you to notice something, that Rome never was ultimately and completely defeated. It's not like somebody rolled in and said, now we own the place. The Goths and even the French behind them, they were so taken by what was Rome, that they sort of just made themselves Roman emperors. But at its zenith, about 114 AD, there you have it. And Rome was never really and totally and ultimately destroyed. Why? Because the Bible prophesied that it would fade. And that in the last days, Rome would rise again. The fourth empire will remain, quote unquote, until it is replaced by what? By the kingdom of Jesus Christ. The remnants of the Roman Empire have endured from this time even until today. What do you mean? Well, pieces of the old Roman Empire have tried and failed to rise to world domination. Do you remember Spain and the Spanish Armada? At one point, was that part of the Roman Empire? British imperialism, as I've said. France, under Napoleon, tried to rise to world dominance. And don't forget the Germans. Twice they attempted to coalesce the entire area under German control, under Bismarck, and of course in the middle of last century. And by the way, the Germans almost pulled it off. And if it wasn't for America happening to be an ocean away and removed from German air attack, it might have gone very, very differently. Adolf Hitler, what particular group of people did he go after? The Jews. That was trying to fulfill Daniel chapter 7. That was the devil trying to raise Rome again. But why was he frustrated? Because God said, it's not time. So what about Rome B? Let's check it out. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. What's up with the horns? Well, just like in the natural world of animals, horns are important. They are a signet of power and strength and authority. So horns in the metaphoric sense, kind of the same thing, and you could insert kings or kingdoms. Rome B will be comprised of 10 kings to get started. Now, are these 10 kings within this sort of old Roman map? It could be. Or are they 10 regions of planet Earth? Don't know. We'll see. It's not such a hot topic today, but remember NAFTA, which is modeled after the European Union, a supra-organization that incorporates many, many nations. After World War II, Europe said, boy, were we wide open to the fascists rolling through on our Eastern Front. Because we are so fiercely nationalistic and independent, we couldn't pull together against them. Let's change that. And so after World War II, it started with the steel and the coal industry, and there were 6 nations that signed this agreement. And then pretty soon it began to evolve and evolve, and then the atomic portion were also involved, and now you have today 27 nations that are part of the European Union. And they dismantle all of the individual currencies of those nations, and they even have a parliament, and they even have a national anthem, Ode to Joy by Beethoven. So it wouldn't take much to literally, with a push of a button, say, go ahead, Europe, be your own sort of nation. They have the economics to do so, and they have the infrastructure to do so, and they're even trying to get the military on the same page as well. Well, because it's doing so well, and it's an economic juggernaut, many other portions of the world are doing the same thing. And I've showed you over the years that there really are, even to this day, about 10 regions of the world. Africa is one of those regions. Asia, and then Europe, of course, the European Union, and even in the Caucasus run by the Russians, they've brought together a bit of a federation themselves. And I've showed you those and their maps, and there are 10 of them, interestingly enough. Could that be the 10 regions? Answer, I don't know. Anyway, let's check it out. Verse 8, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up from among them. From among whom? The 10. Either the Antichrist is going to come out of a 10-region sort of old Roman map, or he could come from practically any place on the planet if those 10 regions on planet Earth are what this verse is speaking of. That's one of the descriptions of the Antichrist, is he has to come from the old Roman Empire. Does it mean that Roman Empire? It could be, and that's the popular understanding. Or, as you see here, he's coming from the 10. And if there's a world 10 region, he could maybe come from anywhere, potentially. I was considering the horns, there was another one, a little one, coming up from among them, from among the 10, before whom 3 of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. So out of the 10, he grabs control over 3 of them. And now there's going to be 7 kings. So if you will, there's going to be 7 heads over 10 horns, the 10 regions. And at some point after the Antichrist does this, they're going to have a new sort of monster on the planet. This Rome B, at some point, will have 7 heads, 7 kings, ruling over 10 horns. Have you heard that in the Bible? Of course, that's in the book of Revelation, chapter 13. You know what? We might as well go there. Hold your finger here in Daniel. Let's actually check it out. Revelation chapter 13. Here's more to the story. John says, "And then I stood on the sand of the sea." We know what that is. It could be the Mediterranean. It could be. But if it's used metaphorically, what is it? All of the Gentile nations. Out of them I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having, look at this, 7 heads with 10 horns. Now we know what this means. Scribble in your margin here, Daniel chapter 7. It started out with 10 regions and 10 kings. But the Antichrist rose from among some of them, grabbed the reins of 3 of them, and now there are 7 kings. Ruling over 10 regions. And on his horns were 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. And his mouth like the mouth of a lion. Does that ring a bell, you guys? But wait a minute. How many of you noticed this is in reverse order? In Daniel chapter 7, it goes lion, bear, leopard, and then beast. We have here beast, leopard, bear, and then lion. What's the difference? Because when you're looking at it from the other side, of course it would appear in reverse order. Does that make sense? And the dragon gave him, this beast, his power. We learned from chapter 12, who's the dragon? That's the devil. Gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority. And I saw one of the heads as if it had been mortally wounded, but the deadly wound was healed. Right in your margin there, Zechariah 11, verse 17. Zechariah the prophet sees this as well. Gives you more of the story. He is wounded in his head so that his right eye is darkened and his right arm is withered. And as you've heard me say before, this human is ultimately going to be killed because it looks like his wound was so bad that he's going to die. But he suddenly is reanimated, if you will, resurrected. It's a counterfeit resurrection. Only this time, it's going to be the devil himself literally in the driver's seat, demon-possessing this person. So the first 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation, this person, this Antichrist of great military prowess and great political savvy and great economic influence, he's the one who pulls the planet, it would seem, out of the brink of very awful warfare. And the whole world looks to this fella as the answer. And in fact, the Jews are so overwhelmed, enamored by him. Why? Because he fixed the Middle East peace problem. He has somehow likely dealt with ISIS. He has somehow dealt with the Islamics versus the Jews. And he has ended Middle East strife, or so it seems. Israel is so blown away by that, they say, "You've got to be our Messiah." But he's not. Remember when Jesus said, "I come in my Father's name, and you Jews wouldn't receive me. But there's going to come one who's going to come in his own name, and him you will receive." That was in reference to the Antichrist. And by the way, there is a model of that in the crucifixion or Passion Week story. Barabbas. There is Pontius Pilate. He's pulling at his collar. "Man, am I in hot water. I got an uprising of these Jews. My boss is not far away, coming into town soon. Man, I got an uprising. How do I quell this? Kill this man, Jesus." What capital crime has he committed? And they couldn't convict him. And then he said, "I find nothing to convict this man." And then they say, "Well, then you're no friend of Caesar." That's job security. So he has Jesus beat up terribly, horribly disfigured. And he parades the bruised and battered and bloody Jesus. And he says, now how about this guy? Is that enough? And they said, no. And then he remembers another loophole. You know, the magnanimous Roman Empire, we have an ability to commute a sentence to substitute one for the other. How about we let this guy go on that clause? No, they said, give us Barabbas. Remember the story? Barabbas. He was a terrorist and a murderer. He was a terrible, awful person. Let's break down his name. Bar means son of. Abba means father. No, we don't want this one coming in his father's name. Give us one coming in his own name. Son of the father, Barabbas. That is astounding and amazing, the story of Barabbas on the crucifixion week. Model form of what the Jews will do one day with the Antichrist himself. Wow. Back to Revelation again. Verse 4. 13 verse 4. So they worshipped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like this beast? Who is able to make war against him? No one can stop him. And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. We're going to see that in the rest of our chapter 7 tonight. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. That's 3.5 years. The last 3.5 years of the book of Revelation, God says, I don't want you to miss it. Here he describes it as 42 months. We're going to see in Daniel chapter 7, it's a time, times and a half a time. 3.5 years. And then the book of Revelation says 1260 days. So don't miss it. Well, what is this blaspheming guy? What's he yelling? Verse 6. And he, this Antichrist, opened up his mouth, this beast with the 7 heads and 10 horns, in blasphemy against God, and blaspheming his name, God's name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. Who is that? That's you guys who got raptured before the Great Tribulation got started. And it's really going to shake up planet Earth, it would seem. What happened to the millions of humans that suddenly disappeared? And all kinds of folklore, perhaps, might come about as to trying to explain their disappearance. Well, he's going to blaspheme us. And forget about those guys who disappeared in the rapture, he'll say. Verse 7, it was granted to him to make war with the saints. Some people use this word saint and think, whoop, that must be the church. No, please understand that the elect or the saints have been used for the people of God in Israel. They have been used for the saints in the church, but they are also used of tribulation saints. Those who didn't get raptured because they didn't believe when God took the body of Christ out, but there will be a great revival during the tribulation. It's those tribulation saints that are going to really take it on the chin. Are you sure they're tribulation saints? Yeah, let's keep watching. And to overcome them. Right in your margin there, Matthew chapter 16. I know who you are, said Peter to Jesus. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Well done, Peter. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And upon this rock, or this understanding, that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, I will build my church. And the gates of hell will not prevail.
You've been listening to the powerfully prophetic Book of Daniel with Pastor Steve Hadley of Harvest Family Fellowship in Reno. Daniel continues to show us that, because God so obviously knows and guides the future of nations, He certainly knows and guides our future as well. What a great comfort that we may not know what the future holds, but Daniel shows us who does hold the future. If you missed any of today's message or would like to hear it in its full, unedited format, You can watch this or any of Pastor Steve's teachings at our website. Just visit us at harvestreno.org. That's www.harvestreno.org. Come join us Sundays at 10:30 and Wednesday evenings at 6:30. Harvest is located at 350 South Rock Boulevard in Reno. Until next time, Pastor Steve encourages all of us to follow Acts 2:42 and Word, Worship, Prayer, and Fellowship every day. May the Lord bless you and keep you as we are washed by the water of the Word.